The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Did You Know Show. I am your host, Alex Parnuk, and together we'll attempt to resolve some of the most complex problems on the planet, but in a very common sense sort of way. Something that seems to be sorely missing in this age of media information overload. In doing this show, one would ask, why have I committed myself to this task? The plain and simple answer is, I want to get information to you that seems to be missing and not provided in the old media. So join me in the show through your interaction by providing comments, suggestions, and if necessary, criticism when you don't agree. You can contact me at shout@theflypod.com. I begin this show with a quote from Noah Webster, speaking on the education of youth in America, 1788. Every child in America should be acquainted with his own country. He should read books that furnish him with ideas that will be useful to him in life and practice. As soon as he opens his lips, he should rehearse the history of his own country. He should lisp the praise of liberty and of those illustrious heroes and statesmen who have wrought a revolution in her favor. Now, is this what has been occurring in the America you and I live in today? I do not think so. One of the greatest harms sitting on the edge of the abyss is Common Core. Oh, but to that a bit later. I welcome you to the Did You Know Show and my continuing series about the different departments of the executive branch of the government. This episode centers on the Department of Education. The Department of Education is one of the smaller departments of the executive branch of government, but it has one of the larger budgets. It administers $68.4 billion worth of our money. Gee, I wonder and hope that they aren't throwing lavish parties or making movies like GSA or IRS with our dollars. I would provide to you one more quote from one of our forefathers also. No country can be called free which is governed by an absolute power. And it matters not whether an absolute royal power or an absolute legislative power, as the consequences will be the same to the people. This from Thomas Paine, 1776. America's history with education began early. We, as a colony, were exceptionally literate, and this history showed in the priorities that state and local governments placed on education. In those early years, our literacy rate was above 60%, and in the northern colonies was as high as 90%. But recall that also, this excluded slaves and Indians. Early on, and even before our Declaration of Independence was signed, there were educational institutions founded and started in the colonies. These were private institutions of learning, I might add. The earliest being New College, founded in 1636 in Massachusetts, which later became Harvard, also William and Mary College and Dartmouth, for a total of 9 distinct educational collegiate institutions in 8 different colonies. The first instance of something akin to a Department of Education was created in 1867 when President Andrew Jackson signed legislation creating the Department of Education, which was primarily in reaction to significant lobbying by an organization known as the National Teachers Association. But 1 year later, it was demoted to the status of a minor bureau within the Department of the Interior. In 1939, the Education Bureau was transferred to the Federal Security Agency, where it was renamed the Office of Education. The continuation of federal involvement in education increased by various laws meant to impact school districts in military defense industry areas after World War II. The then Office of Education, under the Civil Rights Act of 1964, was authorized to deal with problems associated with desegregation, and in 1965, the Elementary and Secondary Education Act created a huge increase in spending pursuant to Title I legislation impacting poverty areas. Between the 60s and the election of 1976, much legislation was pushed and passed, increasing the size of the Office of Education. In 1976, Jimmy Carter advocated creating a Department of Education as a cabinet position. The NEA, or National Education Association, supported Jimmy Carter in the 1976 election and was instrumental in pushing the issue of establishing a Department of Education. The DOE came into existence under Public Law 9688, which was signed into law by Jimmy Carter, and now began the present-day history of the Department of Education. Recall, prior to this, education was a local matter with individual states handling education internally as a state matter. Finally, it should be said that education is not mentioned in the Constitution of the United States and specifically not mentioned in enumerated powers. The Department of Education is run by the Secretary of Education, which at this time is a cabinet-level position. The mission of the Department of Education, as stated on their website, is to promote student achievement and preparation for global competitiveness by fostering educational excellence and ensuring equal access. However, when one goes to the office of the secretary, there is also a mission statement, which reads, "The mission of the Department of Education is to ensure equal access to education and to promote educational excellence throughout the nation." Notice here that the mission priority is reversed from the one mission statement to the other. In the first, student achievement and preparation lead, while in the second mission statement, priority is given to equal access, with educational excellence placed in a secondary role. Perhaps this is a hint into why this department is so inept in its approach to education and more primarily concerned with its own growth, disbursement of grant funds, and programs to nationalize and centralize education. So what does the department do? From their own website, we see that the Department of Education spends money on making policies on federal financial aid, distributing that aid, and monitoring that aid. The Department of Education collects data on our educational system and disseminates research done on that data. Further, the Department of Education focuses international attention on key education issues, and lastly, it prohibits discrimination as to education and ensures equal access to education in America. As in my previous discussions of the particular departments, I often have provided a listing of the different offices or divisions as they pertain to that department. In this discussion, rather than reading you a list of subsecretaries and various offices, I believe an overview is more to the understanding of this department. Under the Secretary of Education and his subordinates, there are, and this depends on which page you go to on the website, either 28 or 29 separate entities employing 4,400 employees and spending that $68.4 billion. Each one of these separate entities has their own mission and organizational structure. What was interesting was that the department's access to the lowest denominator, i.e. localities and states, was organized within regional centers that provided assistance to their specific areas of responsibilities. One would think that within these regional centers, the other branches or entities of the Department of Education would react or find a home, but this was not the case. Due to a variety of organizational structures, which if enumerated here would not just bore everyone to death, but totally confuse the average listener as to how the department is organized. To give you just a smidgen as to the organization, the secretary has 14 separate entities under his direct control. The deputy secretary of education has 5 separate entities or offices as they are described. And lastly, the undersecretary of education has 7 offices or entities under his authority. Let me give you just a sampling of this structure. The Undersecretary of Education deals with the Federal Student Aid Program. Yes, this is where the FAFSA, or Free Application for Student Aid, rests, and the Student Loan Program. It would be here that if you had a problem with your FAFSA, you would have to go search, but good luck. When the Federal Student Aid Program, or office as they call it, there are 10 additional sub-offices, and your guess would be as good as mine as to where you can go. Now, we would not have big governance if each of these subcategories didn't have their own organizational structure with lots more employees. Let it be said that looking at the broad picture, one finds that the Department of Education reaches and touches not only all aspects of education, but also other aspects of the parent-child community relationship in a manner that lends itself to growth rather than to accomplishment. I make this statement due to the inevitable belief that government has grown to such size that it is self-enlarging with mission upon mission, creating more and more levels of bureaucracy. Just think of No Child Left Behind, Race to the Top, both federal programs that are encumbering us now because of the funding methods being used. Here's another small example of the web that has been woven. Under the Office of the Deputy Secretary of Education, we find the Office of Elementary and Secondary Education. Now, this office is responsible for a myriad of programs and initiatives, including hurricane help for schools and a whole subcategory of academic improvement and teacher quality programs, the Office of Early Learning, Impact Aid Programs, Office of Indian Education, Office of Migrant Education, Office of Safe and Healthy Students, School Support and Rural Programs, Office of School Turnaround, and lastly, the Student Achievement and School and Accountability Programs. Now, you would think that was it, But each one of these aforementioned programs or offices have subcategories just too numerous to mention. However, I would bring to the attention of the listeners within the auspices of these programs, I found what seems to be a bit of duplication. Since I was describing the office of the Deputy Secretary, whose responsibility included the Office of Elementary and Secondary Ed, and under that office I found the Office of Indian Education, which manages grants such as demonstration grants for Indian children, Indian Endowment Formula grants, and Indian Education and Professional Development grants. But wait, when I looked at my organizational chart again, I remembered that under the Office of the Undersecretary, there was a sub-branching for a White House initiative on American Indian Alaskan Indian education. I looked further, and lo and behold, that subgrouping had its own office and staff and organization. Talk about making jobs and creating bureaucracies upon bureaucracies with directors and staffs. So one would have to ask, what do they do? They all are either managing grants or giving out grant monies. Folks, this is where the bucks are in the Department of Education. One could spend a lifetime studying the organizational minutiae and learning how to get money out of these various entities and provide oneself quite a healthy living. But always remembering to have your grant agreeing with what the current administration's mission or priorities are at that time. I find it mind-boggling that this institution called government has extended its tentacles into our daily lives, especially the aspect of education, without any constitutional authority. Generally, when speaking to someone from the Department of Education or those in favor of the largesse of government, they fall on the Commerce Clause as giving them the authority to do all of these things. I truly believe that the Department of Education is nothing more than a money laundering enterprise for some $60 billion that is being taken from us, the taxpayers. The business of education used to be within the confines of the local communities with an organizational assist from the states to maintain state standards. Now the federal government, through this Department of Education, has stepped in and through its myriad of programs and offices, divvies out monies to all types of activities, programs, and assistance setups that do nothing for education except spend our money. It has been estimated that the federal government provides approximately 7-10% of the costs of education in the United States. Can you believe that we need 400,000 people to tell us how to educate our kids? While doing research for this segment, I ran across numerous claims of helping communities and areas improve their educational standards. Now, if that's the case, let's just take one community that is tied directly to the federal purse strings. And that community is Washington, D.C. and the D.C. school system. This system, with all the government largesse, is lucky to graduate 50% of its seniors, and the actual number is 59%, the lowest in the country. When they finally did get an aggressive superintendent, Michelle Rhee, they fired her. Let me read this to you from this website, philly.com. Rhee is one of America's foremost educational reformers and one of the stars of the hot new documentary, Waiting for Superman. She's an all-star who struggled mightily to reform a school district that spends more than $15,500 a year on each student while only 12% are reading at grade level. Need I say more? This is not only in D.C., that there is a problem with the schools. It's in most of our large metropolitan areas where school unions rule and the students get left out in the cold. And you ask, what does the Department of Education do? Well, folks, it hands out more grants for more studies by their education cronies to give to their cronies who travel from one bureaucracy to another. Listeners, that is the Department of Education. Not exactly what I would call a stellar entity that should be financed by our tax dollars. Let me read to you a small quote from a Department of Education site. This is directed at grantees. Grantees are required to develop 5-year plans for carrying out authorized activities that address state and regional needs. Did you catch that phrase? 5-year plan? For those of us old enough to remember the old USSR and the Cold War, what was it they were always instituting? 5-year plans. It didn't work for them, and federalized 5-year plans won't work for us here. Since the inception of the Department of Education, ask yourself, has the education of our children really improved in the United States? Are our kids reading better? Are they able to do math in their heads? Just go to a teller in a store and see how he gives you change. If the computer isn't working, most likely he isn't either. Let's get back to localized control of our schools with a bit of direction from the states. Well, that finally kind of brings me back to that first statement I made about Common Core. So you say you haven't heard of the Common Core Initiative. Well, folks, if you're a parent, grandparent, child, or a caring America, you have better hear of the Common Core. In its full name, the National Common Core Standards. It is a national student standard system, including biometric data collection on our kids and their families, that will forever change the educational system in the United States. Remember our roots: local control of schools. Common Core is nationalized control of our schools from K through 12. But don't listen to me. Listen to the experts. Listen to the teachers, the administrators, and parents speaking to this issue. I would recommend to you a video on YouTube that explains this subject, provides both sides equal time. Then you be the judge. Just take some time. Just go to your browser, go to Google, and put in California, put in Common Core, and then put in Conejo, which is C-O-N-E-J-O. This was a special panel discussion regarding the issue of the Common Core standards. Let me warn you first, this is not an easy listen. But remember this, the issue is exceptionally important. This is about our kids' future and the future of our country. Well, that's my show for today. I hope you have enjoyed our journey into the Department of Education. Well, until next time, in our next Did You Know Show, keep your powder dry and your silver coins in your pocket.